TNT with your worldwide news update. On Tuesday, the war between Russia and Ukraine hit its 1,000th day. Today, multiple Western embassies are closed as Russian air attacks threaten Kyiv. AP correspondent Charles De La Desma reports.
The U.S. embassy in Kyiv says it would stay closed Wednesday after receiving a warning of a potentially significant Russian air attack on the Ukrainian capital. The precautionary step comes after Russian officials promised a response to President Joe Biden's decision to let Ukraine strike targets on Russian soil with U.S.-made weapons, a move that has angered the Kremlin. The embassy adds its closure and attack warning have been issued in the context of ongoing Russian missile and drone attacks on Kyiv and is anticipating a quick return to regular operations. I'm Charles De La Desma.
Russian President Vladimir Putin's spy chief warned the West on Wednesday that it risked disastrous consequences if the United States and its European allies stoke a direct military confrontation with Russia over Ukraine. Time is running short for negotiators at the United Nations climate talks in Azerbaijan. They need to find an agreement that can bring far more money to poor nations affected by climate change than wealthy nations have shown they are willing to pay. Addressing the COP29 assembly, Pauline Antoine Prosper with St. Lucia's Sustainable Development Ministry detailed the intensifying damage to Caribbean nations from climate change.
We sense rising sea levels, soaring temperatures, erratic rainfall, and more intense storms with little to no time for recovery before the next extreme event strikes.
A new scientific study found Wednesday that human-caused climate change made Atlantic hurricanes about 29 kilometers per hour stronger in the last 6 years. Pressure is building on the host nation to come to a deal by the time the talks are scheduled to conclude on Friday. This is VOA News. U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein said in Beirut on Wednesday he will travel on to Israel to try to bring truce talks to a close after making quote-unquote additional progress in a second meeting with Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri. A Lebanon-based diplomat requesting anonymity said progress had been made in the talks. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday that Israel would continue to conduct military operations against Hezbollah even if a ceasefire was reached. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said on Wednesday that China's decision to decline a meeting with him during the ASEAN defense ministers meeting was a setback for the whole region.
Now, I regret that the PRC chose not to meet here. The PRC's decision is a setback for the whole region. As I've said consistently, the right time to meet is any time.
According to reporting by CNN, Austin had hoped to meet with China's Minister of National Defense, Zhang Yun, but China rejected the request, citing a recent Taiwan arms sale. Other countries attending the ASEAN meetings include Japan, South Korea, India, Australia, and China. The Kenyan National Commission on Human Rights condemned the abduction and deportation of Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye on Wednesday. Vice Chair Raymond Nyeres.
Kenya is a country that respects its obligations, and we want to call upon the government not to deport those people who are seeking asylum in our country. They should abide by international law that requires them to respect the law.
Besigye, a longtime opponent of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, was reportedly kidnapped in Nairobi last Saturday after attending a book launch by Kenyan opposition figure Martha Karua. Besigye, who has unsuccessfully run against Museveni 4 times since 2001, has often been targeted by authorities. Recent months have seen a crackdown on opposition figures in Uganda, with prominent leaders arrested and party members put on trial. A major storm that has killed at least one person swept across the northwest U.S., battering the region with strong winds and rain overnight. The storm system is considered a bomb cyclone, which occurs when a cyclone intensifies rapidly. Falling trees struck homes and littered roadways across northwest Washington, with over 600,000 without power Wednesday morning. In an interview for Como News, Wendy Harrington described the moment a 70-year-old cedar tree fell on her house.
It felt explosive, or like there was a bomb going off, breaking glass, the sound of breaking glass. Everything was just very loud. I thought the whole wall was coming down.
Fire officials in Linwood, Washington said a woman died when a large tree fell on a homeless encampment. The Weather Prediction Center issued excessive rainfall risks through Friday, and hurricane force wind warnings were in effect. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
This is It's Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
There's a growing concern even within the Kenyan public that the government is overstepping its boundaries, especially even with not only with its citizens, but also even with citizens of foreign countries.
That was Edgar Gitua, international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, and Ugandan opposition figure Kizza Besigye reportedly being kidnapped in Nairobi and now held in Uganda. Details coming up. Also, stability is returning to northeastern Nigeria after decades of insurgency, and at least 50 Boko Haram fighters were killed and 7 members of Nigeria's infrastructure security force were missing following an ambush. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The opposition leader of the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi, has won the territory's presidential election. More popularly known as Iro, he won with 64% of the vote to become Somaliland's 6th president since it broke away from Somalia in 1991. The 69-year-old, a former Speaker of Somaliland's Parliament, beat incumbent Musa Abdi Bihi, who took 35% of the vote. I talked to VOA Somali Service reporter Muhammad Olad to brief us more on the election.
Well, yes, the opposition leader, Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi, of the main opposition, Wadani Party, was declared the winner on Tuesday, prompting his jubilant supporters to turn out to the streets of the main cities and towns in Somaliland to celebrate his victory. Mr. Abdullahi is a 69-year-old. He received more than 50% of the votes, defeating President Musa Bihi Abdi, who sought a second term after 7 years in office.
And Mohamed, President Musa Bihi Abdi of the ruling Kulmiya party, why did he lose in a big margin like this? What did Mr. Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi campaign on?
Well, I spoke to several analysts in the region. They say that it's a normal in Somalia and Somaliland when somebody has been ruling for a long time and there was no change, people always support the change. And Erra has been doing a fantastic job in when it comes campaigning during the campaign in Somaliland election. He had served as Somaliland's parliament speaker in 2005. In the Siad Barre regime, he served as Somali diplomat in Moscow. He has a diploma from the Somali Institute of Development Administration and Management, CIMAT. He was educated at California State University and has an MBA from New York State University. So his education, his fame, and his political experience has give him this opportunity and blast the people wanting to get change.
Talking about change, how is the reaction in Somaliland to the new election?
Hundreds of people have been turning out to the streets of the main cities in Somaliland, celebrating for the success of Abdullahi Erro. They say that this is a new era for Somaliland, this is a new president, and they are expecting that this president will go ahead with searching the recognition for Somaliland, which has been which the previous presidents have been trying for the last 33 years.
Any reaction from Mogadishu?
Yes, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud congratulated to the new president, Abdirahman Erro, and he said that a peaceful election and democratic way of electing leaders is something that Somalis can be proud of. There was no negative reaction from Mogadishu. Also, people were congratulating to the Somaliland population and Somaliland leaders about this election. And the overall mood of Somaliland and Somalia was a kind of a positive.
That was VOA Somali Service reporter Muhammad Olad speaking with me and briefing me on Somaliland's election. As you just heard, the opposition leader of the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi, has won the territory's presidential election. He defeated incumbent Musa Abdi Bihi. For a breakaway territory to conduct free and fair elections and to abide by the results in that part of the world is commendable, says Professor John Makubambaku, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington. However, he says Somaliland's new leader will have to grapple with the diplomatic fallout over a deal to lease landlocked Ethiopia a 20-kilometer section of its coastline for 50 years to set up a naval base.
The fact that people in that breakaway territory, which is not recognized by international law, are able to conduct an election and allow the citizens or the people who live there, the nationals who live there, to exercise their right to vote, only proves to you that if only Africans were willing to stop all this inter-ethnic fighting, give the people an opportunity to decide who their rulers are, we can have a lot of peace within the continent. It is true that Somaliland is not recognized by the UN as a legitimate state, but put that aside and ask yourself what is happening in this breakaway territory. What, in my opinion, what we are seeing is that if Africans are given the opportunity to determine how to govern themselves, they can do it very successfully. The fact that we are not able to do so in many countries across the continent, like Sudan and South Sudan and other territories, has to do with the ambitions of opportunistic leaders like those that you see in Sudan, who are continuously fighting to stay in power, even though they have not received any legitimate mandate from the people to govern.
Somaliland, you are right, declared independence from Somalia in 1991 and has sustained its own government, currency, and security structures despite lacking international recognition, as you just mentioned. But Somaliland's latest agreement with neighboring Ethiopia, granting it access to the Indian Ocean in exchange for recognition, has caused political tension between Somaliland and Somalia. Somalia is accusing Ethiopia of undermining its territorial integrity. Your thoughts on that?
If you are within the Ethiopian government, you could see the reason for that kind of an agreement, because Ethiopia has a lot of problems having access to the sea. A recognition of it, Somaliland's independence by Ethiopia, is not going to give Somaliland any international legitimacy. That's not the way you gain international legitimacy. So-called recognition by Ethiopia is probably going to produce more benefits for Ethiopia than for Somaliland if Ethiopia is able to have that access to the sea.
The leaders in Somalia, they have reacted to the opposition party's win in Somaliland with hopes for better relations between the country and the breakaway region. So this agreement probably was the last administration's move. Now with a new leadership, this whole thing with Ethiopia could just be cancelled.
We have problems in international law because Somaliland is not a state recognized by international law. That agreement, if Ethiopia was actually looking for a way to have legitimate access to the sea, that agreement should have been signed between Addis Ababa and Mogadishu, not between Addis Ababa and Somaliland. I really find it difficult to imagine that that agreement can be enforced internationally, given the fact that one party to the agreement is not an internationally recognized sovereign state.
That was Professor John Makubambaku, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Utah. Ugandan opposition figure Kizza Besigye was charged with possession of an illegal firearm today when he appeared in a military court days after he was reported missing from Kenya. The military court in Kampala also charged the former president of the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, with soliciting military support in Geneva, Greece, and Nairobi to prejudice security of defense forces. Besigye went missing in Nairobi on Saturday. He was charged alongside FDC member Haji Lutale Kamolegia. The pair, who deny all charges against them, were remanded in custody until December the 2nd. Besigye's wife, Winnie Bayanyima, the executive director of UniAIDS, wrote on social platform X today that her husband was kidnapped on Saturday in Kenya and that she was reliably informed that he was being held in a military jail. Besigye's disappearance is raising concerns about human rights in Kenya. For more on this incident, I talked to Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi.
The Kenyan government, current government, has lost its human rights direction because all these are violations against people's individual rights. There's a growing concern even within the Kenyan public that the government is overstepping its boundaries, especially even with not only with its citizens, but also even with citizens of foreign countries. We're talking about opposition leaders or people who somehow are not in good terms with governments from various places. And then when they're in Kenya, it's almost a guarantee that they will get kidnapped and deported against their will.
When you assess the overall thing, is there an extradition thing between Uganda and Kenya?
Thank you for that question. So this brings, even if there's an extradition treaty, it still has to follow law. Because in an extradition treaty, the government, assuming Uganda makes a formal complaint to Kenya that Kizza Besigye, who is wanted for this, and they list down the number of crimes or what it is that they are looking for him, and they request Kenya to formally expedite or make arrangements. Then Kenya, the government just doesn't wake up and do it. They're supposed to go to the judiciary. There is a court procedure. Kizza Besigye should go to a court of law in Kenya and defend himself on why he needs to be extradited or deported or not. Has he committed crimes? Does he feel he is safe? Is his life in danger? So there is due process. The problem now of these extrajudicial abductions is that they are outside the law. So Uganda makes a claim that we want Kizza Besigye because of treason or because of whatever crime they accuse him of. If Kenya does not verify that, we are going against international human rights law. We are infringing on his rights. Kenya is spoiling its image in the international diplomatic circles. We are spoiling our name. And remember, I think we sit on the Human Rights Commission. We sit on the Human Rights Commission. So it is purely ironical, very ironical, that we would be the ones perpetrating these atrocities, whereas we purport to protect and uphold human rights.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, speaking with me by phone from Nairobi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you so you can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. That's +1-202-258-3076. Stability is returning to northeastern Nigeria after decades of insurgency, due in part to the strong partnership between the military and the Borno state government in reducing terrorist activities and rescuing abducted civilians. Gibson Emeka reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Operation Hide and Kai, the military's counterinsurgency operation in the northeast, has been instrumental in disrupting terrorist activities. The operation, launched in 2021, has seen significant successes, including the rescue of numerous civilians held captive by insurgents. The deputy theater commander of Operation Hide and Kai, Kenneth Chigbu, lauds the partnership with Borno state government.
The joint task force remain committed to the mandate of the joint task force, which is to facilitate the restoration of normalcy in the northeast region in order to enable socioeconomic activities to thrive. The Borno State government has always come to our aid and support in ensuring that the entire state is rid of the activities of terrorists.
One such success story is Alice Loksha, a UNICEF worker abducted by the Islamic State West Africa Province insurgent group in a 2018 raid on a humanitarian camp in Borno. After 6 years in captivity, she escaped and found refuge in a military camp. Loksha credits her freedom to military efforts.
Thank God for the military. Coming to their place is just like, they are just like, I don't know what to say, but we really thank them. And we pray that God will continue to strengthen them and give them victory over this terrorism.
The Borno State government is working closely with the military to support survivors like Loksha. Zawaira Gambo, the state's commissioner for women's affairs, reiterates the importance of the partnership in the region's stability.
For the synergy that exists between the military and the government, because without the enabling environment, Borno State won't be enjoying the peace and stability we are witnessing today. It is that singular commitment and political will of the government that our sisters are able to escape, to be received by the military and officially be handed over today to the Borno State government.
In a bid to lasting victory, Deputy Theatre Commander Kenneth Chigbu has urged terrorists to surrender, promising amnesty to those who lay down their arms.
Let me also use this opportunity on behalf of the Theatre Commander to once again extend the olive branch to the so-called terrorists. The fight is long enough. They should come out. Amnesty will be granted them, just as the lot of them who have surrendered.
In July 2024, Operation Haidenkai successfully rescued 330 captives, including a schoolgirl abducted in the town of Chibok in 2014. Most recently, Alice Loksha and another victim have been handed over to the Borno State government for rehabilitation. For Gibson Emeka in Abuja, Roderick James, VOA News.
At least 50 Boko Haram fighters were killed on Tuesday, and 7 members of Nigeria's infrastructure security force were missing following an insurgent ambush on a convoy monitoring the country's power grid installations. Babawale Afolabi, a spokesperson for the Nigerian Civil Defense Corps, a government agency set up to protect infrastructure, said security operatives were ambushed by about 200 Boko Haram fighters during the patrol mission. According to Reuters, Afolabi said more than 50 insurgents were killed in the fighting, but 7 security operatives were missing, adding that efforts are underway to find them. He said a few others of the security force were wounded. Boko Haram has waged an insurgency for 15 years, mainly in the northeast. The group has been weakened by the military and internal fighting, but remains a threat as it makes deadly attacks against civilians and government targets. The rise of AI tools like ChatGPT has sparked debate in higher education, raising questions about ethics and integrity in teaching, learning, and knowledge creation. In South Africa, some academic institutions are taking a proactive approach, integrating AI into their curriculums. Experts say this step is not only innovative, but also helps level the playing field among students. Zahir Kasim reports from Johannesburg.
This is a final year law class in South Africa, where students are using advanced AI tools like ChatGPT provided by the university. The University of the Witwatersrand is among several institutions embracing AI in the classroom here. Law professor Nicole Steyn believes these tools are helping to create a more inclusive learning environment.
But we have this reality that we have 12 different languages and various backgrounds, and now it's allowing us to actually start looking at the knowledge behind it, not just how great you are at English.
an ongoing study across 5 South African universities examines how students are using generative AI in their studies. Chikezi Uzukbunam from Rhodes University says the tools are especially helpful for first-year students learning how to write academically and later as study aides and tutors.
Just like when Google came out or when the internet came out and even calculators, there were whole lots of moral panic, and especially people trying to say, oh, what is the future of academic integrity when we allow these technologies to have their way? But we think that in the next few years, AI is going to become normal. So the question is, how do we begin to have conversations about how students can use AI effectively and ethically?
Ethics remain a central challenge for African universities adopting AI. Eduvos, a private university in South Africa, actively integrates AI into its classes. However, both staff and students are still navigating its implications. Mini de Klerk is a digital transformation specialist at Eduvos.
No assignment at the moment, a traditional assignment, cannot not be done by AI. So what does that mean? We simply have to redesign the way we assess. It's on us to educate also our students on what is plagiarism at the moment. If you copy and paste something directly from ChatGPT, is that plagiarism even if you declare its use? I think this is a very important and valid question and something we have to grapple with.
At WITS, law students are thriving with the support of AI while the technology gradually impacts society and industries. Thomas Alfred is a final year law student at Witwatersrand.
I think it's an incredible tool and I'm really glad I have it. It makes work a lot easier. But do I think my job's going away? No, I don't. I think I'll be fine.
By embracing AI, these South African universities hope to bridge gaps in academic backgrounds and access to knowledge, moving towards a more equitable education system. Zahir Kasim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Helen Cordion, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.